It's your boy, The Voice, and you're listening to The Voice of the DHL. We got a fun episode for y'all today, recapping the trade deadline. And with so many players on the move, there's bound to be a bit of time spent in the hotel lobby as everybody gets themselves situated on their new teams. So let's go ahead, figure out who you should be scooping up from the hotel lobby and put it on your fantasy roster. Let's get to it.
Today's episode is a little bit different from the norm. I have a co-host today to help me discuss the transactions that have happened over this little trade deadline, trade period. And Ontario Elite, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, sir. How about yourself?
Doing well, doing well. Definitely had an interesting day today. It's been an interesting last week, really, you know, with all these trades that have gone down. And we'll get to that shortly. But I want to discuss some recent NBA news. First, we got to start off. We had a kind of actual fight between Mo Bamba, Austin Rivers. It was said that Mo Bamba yelled, "This is not high school." And Austin Rivers got all mad, walked all the way across the bench, went and got in his face. Mo Bamba threw down. We had a little skerfuffle. Question, Mo Bamba, Austin Rivers, if they actually got into a fight, who do you think wins?
I'm going to call that a draw because both of them don't look like they can fight from what I saw. But you got to give Austin Rivers his credit. You know, he stepped up to a seven-footer like it was nothing in front of his bench. So if anyone looks like scary, it's going to be Mo Bamba. You're out here. You're talking real tough with your whole team behind you. And then Suggs going to file thrown down by his neck. That's cold.
Hey, I think I got to take Austin Rivers too. You know, Mo Bamba looked a little slow with his punches. Austin Rivers a little quicker, able got that feistiness, you know, that aggressiveness, like you said, just walk up to the bench. I think that gets him the advantage.
He definitely wasn't scared.
Not at all. Now, what do you think Mo Bamba actually said? Because, again, the reports say that Mo Bamba said, "This is not high school." And then, but we see Markelle Fultz's reaction in the replay, and it looks like he probably said a little bit more than, "This is not high school." But I will say, disclaimer, Rivers has that type of irrational confidence that if you said that he peaked in high school, I think he really would take it like you stepped over the line by saying he peaked in high school. But what do you think? What do you think he said that got him that heated to walk all the way over on the next play?
Well, it's funny. I saw his interview, his post-game interview, because I watched some guys' interviews depending on the situation or depending on what happened in that game. So I watched his interview, and he said something different. So, and he said he didn't want to snitch on him, but he said some foul shit. Because just saying that you know, you're not what you are in high school, they might be fighting words. That's just like, okay, whatever, fool. Like, but he had to say something like, "That's a little below the belt for me to come fight you in front of your bench by myself."
I'm telling you, and like I said, I don't know if you watched the Segura film on the replay, but if you see Markelle Fultz's face after Mo Bamba yells whatever he yelled,
he said crazy.
He definitely did, man. Now we also had a little bit of a kind of a sad incident here with Ja Morant. And if it's true, if we go over the synopsis, there was an argument that spilled off from the court into the players' parking garage. Ja Morant and his friends were getting into it with the Pacer players and staff. And Ja Morant and his friends got into the car, and supposedly there was a laser pointing at the bus, and they felt like they were in danger and that it might have been attached to some type of firearm. My immediate reaction is that this is stupid for Ja to even put himself into a situation like this. You think back to guys like Ray Lewis, who almost jeopardized his career by sitting a shotgun in a car that had a body in the trunk. You think about Aaron Hernandez that thought he was a little gangster and went out and murdered somebody. And now he's spending life in jail. This could have went south quick for Ja Morant. Why do you think he hasn't matured enough to realize you got to secure the bag? Like, what's going on here?
I'm going to attribute that to his friends getting in his ear, probably. If it's true, somebody better get Gilbert Arenas on the phone and let him know how that went for him, because that didn't go well. Like I said, I think it's got to be the people around you, because, like, if you're worth $200 million, why do you even want to roll around with guns or something and fight guys from the fucking Pacers after the game? Like, it's not like you're fighting, like, some Drew League guys out here in Compton and they just happen to get into it. Like, these are the Pacers in Indiana. Like, where are you fighting? By the cornfields? Like, I don't know if you would let it go that far where you got to pull a gun. And it's not the first time they said something about him, because I read another article. They said he punched a 17-year-old kid in a pickup game. Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, mm-hmm. your hands are worth millions of dollars. You want to punch a little kid in a pickup game? Like, you're asking to fumble this. So, I mean, I hope it's not true. Like they said, he said it was capped, so we'll see. But I was going to attribute that to his friends being in his ear, because I think if, you know, this situation, like all the homies were in the league together, somebody's going to be the person to get one of us into a fight. Like, there's too many personalities, too many people that were going to feel played, and is this going to, it would go left if we were in that kind of situation. I could see it happening, because your friends are going to get you in a different place than parents are, probably, like your wife.
Yeah.
Pretty much always like your prize on the line all the time.
I believe there was a laser, but I don't believe that there was a gun, because like you said, I have to believe that John Morant is smart enough not to get in a car that has guns when he's worth that much money. And
I wouldn't. They said all the NBA cats were with guns.
My thing is, you're in a parking garage that has cameras all over the place because you got all type rafts or rafts or whatever you call them. You got Maseratis, you got Bentleys, you got all type of stuff in that parking garage. You got security. You got the player security. You got private security in that garage. It just seems stupid to bring your own gun, or, you know, say even your friends, like rival friends, like unless one of your friends is your designated bodyguard, it just doesn't make sense to me to have guns in the car, especially in that environment when you're coming from a game.
I listened to the No Chill podcast, and Gilbert Arenas is talking of guns. He explained that players bring guns to the locker room or to their car because they want to avoid going home to pick it up on the way to going out after games. So, like, sometimes they're going to go to the club after the game, the gun's going to be on them in their car, in their locker, so they don't got to make a stop on the way to the club after. So, I mean, I get, in that regard, it makes a little bit of sense, but still, like, if you need guns to go to the club, then why are you going? I mean, you're walking around jewelry, and I mean, I can see the other side of it, too. You're walking around with this $1 million jewelry, you got all the finest clothes on, you got your, you know, your whatever, Maybach and all that stuff, so you might want to feel like you need to protect it. So, I see somewhat of the both sides of it, but at the same time, you're not pointing at other players. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and I like ratchet stuff too, but when you're making that type of money, you can't be going to a club where ratchet stuff is going on. You gotta move on, be above that. So you are a Lakers fan, and of course we have LeBron James. He broke the scoring record on Tuesday, surpassing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Also last week, he moved into fourth for career assists versus the Knicks. LeBron, he's played 44 games this season. Let's say he plays at least 60 this season. He plays at least another two seasons, and he could play at least 60 games. He's averaging about 20 points a game. There's a ability to put another 2,800, 3,000 on top of the record already that he has now. Is LeBron your GOAT?
My GOAT? GOAT is subjective. I think you can definitely make a case for him now. Not that you couldn't before this, but it strengthened his case, because now you're the all-time leading scorer, you're top five assists, you're probably going to be top 10 in rebounds, all that other stuff. Your top playoff scoring, your resume is going to be impeccable, but it's a more of a longevity thing. Like, if you're talking about one game for my life, but I want LeBron, I'm not sure I want him. Like if it's one game for my life, I might think I want Kobe. I might think I want Jordan. I might think I want Kareem. Like, you know, that I might want Shaq for one game for my life. Like, I know he's going to for sure go balls out and give me 30-something and 15. So I don't know how that GOAT argument going to go. He's definitely making a case for himself, just on the longevity of it. I think he's changing the game and showing people, like, yo, like, if you really dedicate yourself to this craft and take care of your body, you can make this argument for yourself and make it better, because it's not necessarily like he's a better player than Jordan or a better player than Kobe. He's been playing so good for so long.
Sustained excellence. And that's what he said in his interview after the game, that he never cheated the game. And basically, like, you know, we hear about Shaq and coming into camp out of shape or not really being ready, you know, trying to use the season to play himself into shape. We hear about players like Luka Doncic now, where, you know, he's been coming into camp out of shape and stuff like that. Since day one, LeBron has always, you never had to worry about LeBron being in shape or being ready to play for the season. Now, as he's gotten older, some of the injuries have started to kind of catch up on him a little bit. But in general, we know LeBron's going to be ready. He's going to be ready to start the season. He's going to be ready to play the season. And for the most part, he's going to be pretty durable.
Yeah, he's a freak of nature. Would you want to play that long?
No, I'm thinking about it now, because I'm like 1 year older than LeBron. I'm just like, I couldn't imagine. I tried to run some sprints the other day, and I was like, nah. I got a power walk if I want to get back in shape. I can't run those sprints.
I still play and everything, and I'm on a meniscus right now. So, like, I can imagine, like it hurts to play right now, and I'm 30. I'm 41. And I can imagine he's had more than a meniscus, or he probably had a gang of high ankle sprains and concussions, like all kind of stuff. He just keeps on going. I mean, I think I wouldn't want to play in the NFL for sure, like right now. Like, I probably think I can get like 10 minutes in an NBA game, but like right now, like, that's probably the only thing professional I would play. or even consider playing.
And like he could probably do this like at least another 3 years or so. That's crazy.
Or five, because like what's gonna stop him like to play bully ball? Like you can play bully ball forever. Like he gets to the paint and nobody can do anything with him.
Nope. And now he can shoot too. So he can pick his poison with, you know, get in the paint. If you leave him open, he can knock down. He can spot up and shoot. So the man has transformed his game, and you know, we are witnesses, I guess.
Yeah, if I'm LeBron, I don't want to quit till I can get 7 rings and 45,000 points. That would probably be where I want to. That'd be my goal before I leave. 45,000 points, 7 rings. Then I don't want to hear it.
45,000, man. I'm sure, you know, the game changes and everything. I know people are shooting way more threes, but damn, that's like, I can't. I don't know why I thought we ever going to beat Kareem's record, but that's a lot of points, man. That's a lot.
You think he could Tom Brady the league right now?
Oh, I do. And like I said, even if you say he's just going to be a 20-point scorer, I can see him easily, you know, hey, take his foot off the gas, you know, give you a couple points here and there, let the young guys do it, let the ADs of the world do it, you know what I'm saying? And just really be like, he can be a very productive player in his old age. I mean, even you look at somebody like Karl Malone, who was, even up until when he played with the Lakers, he was still a really productive player his last season with the Lakers. So I think LeBron could definitely do it too.
We'll save that Karl Malone argument for another day, but whatever.
Malone was in shape, man. You might not. I'm not talking about being a gold or great, but I'm just talking about a guy that's old, getting up into age. Karl Malone kept himself in good shape all the way through his career.
Yeah, I guess to some extent. I don't know if he kept himself in LeBron shape, but he kept himself in shape.
Yeah, well, nobody. Yeah, LeBron is one of one. But let's go ahead, and we got a lot of trades to get into. But before we get into some of the NBA moves that happened, since I have you on the show, let's take a moment of your time to review the recent trade that you made with UG. Just to remind everybody, you sent Paolo Banchero and DeJounte Murray to UG, and you brought back LeBron James. And Onyeka Okongwu. What was your thought process going into the trade, and how are you feeling about it almost a week later?
I'm trying to keep pace with you. You top three guys. You guys are up there making super teams. I got to do something. You got you, Tank Stoppers, and Undeniable GOAT. You guys are over here damn near cheating. So I got to do something.
Cheating.
But yeah, LeBron could add. I know there's risk involved with him, but at the end of the day, like the way he's playing right now is like, I think it's worth dealing with for now. I'm not sure if I want to trade him or not. I've had talks with certain people about maybe potentially trading him, but I don't know. I mean, I think this season, LeBron's going to have to play. Like, there ain't going to be no sitting out towards the end of the season because get it going. Like, they're 5 games under 500. They're 2 games out the play-in, and, you know, they just made all these moves. So it's time to make these moves happen. Like, part one, he's not playing tonight, and we need his win against the Bucks team. And, I mean, I know it's the Bucks, and you know, but still, and he just broke the record, but, I mean, you're here to play, and we're trying to get to the playoffs. You say you want to get there. I mean, why are you sitting down then?
Well, like I said, after he broke the record, I think he needs to kind of recuperate this ankle a little bit. So I could see him missing 1 or 2 games, kind of giving himself a little time to recuperate. But like you said, because of the moves that they made, and we'll get to some of that later, I think at least you've given LeBron a fighting chance now. And because of that, you'll have the opportunity and motivation to try to say, okay, let me give it one last go. Let me see what we can do and see if we can make a little playoff run.
The team they made now is a LeBron team. They got tall defensive wings that can shoot. They got big men that can shoot. They got a point guard that doesn't really need to, you know, handle the ball like crazy. He can still play off the ball and knock down three. So everything is there for them to make a move. They just have to do it. So, like I said, it looks good on paper, but you have to apply it. And there's like others, according to Shannon Sharp, they should trade Malik Beasley because him and Scottie Pippen Jr. will have a problem. But, you know, I guess they'll work that out in practice or something. But like I said, at the end of the day, like, they need to start playing now. Like, they're getting no favors done for them. They've had refs take 5 games for them, for sure. An easy 5 games from refs.
Come on, man. Don't be one of those guys, man. That's everybody in the NBA that lost last minute second games, man. Come on, bro.
Calls for the look, game.
I know the Boston one was hella blatant, but I'm just saying in general, like, this happens. That's basketball, man. That happens.
No, not basketball. You're a professional ref. It's happening right in front of you. There's no excuse. I was at the Dallas game where Troy Brown Jr. gets fouled on a 3-pointer right in front of the ref. They didn't call nothing. Like, these are games that, like, we should have won.
Calls get missed, Chase. There's 48 minutes. They had overtime. But okay. You know what happened? LeBron threw a tantrum. He threw a tantrum, got himself all out the game because he was so pissed off and whiny about missing the call. It was a bad call. He had the right
horrible call.
To be, all right, but still, he got so discombobulated about it that when overtime started, they didn't even show up. You got Patrick Beverly out here making memes, showing the ref camera shot of the missed call and all this kind of stuff. And they took their stuff all out the game because they were no longer focused on winning their game. They were just so upset about we got the game stolen from us that they didn't even take the extra overtime to go out there and actually still have a chance to win the game. So that's their fault for losing their intensity level that game. They still had a chance, Chase.
And I know you. Like, if this happened to you, we wouldn't be able to leave the gym. I've seen you go off on a foul call in Bard Park in Baton Rouge. And the game wasn't even close to over. So I could imagine for game what you would do. Could you imagine, like, you're fighting for your playoff life and you get fouled for a game on a layup or blade, and he had to hear the slap, a blatant slap, and they didn't say nothing.
Look, they're fighting for their playoff life, and then what happened? LeBron and AD both sat the next game. So if every game is so important, why are they sitting the next game?
Probably out of protest.
Well, look, baby, we got a lot of trades. We got a lot of trades to go over. So let's not waste too much more time on this. Let's start off with the trade that set it off for everything that happened this week. And we'll start with what happened over the weekend. Kyrie got traded to Dallas. You look at the actual players involved. Kyrie Irving heads to Dallas to partner with Luka Doncic. Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith get sent to Brooklyn. Did anybody lose their game value in this trade to you?
Spencer Dinwiddie definitely got some new value, looks like, because I just watched his game and they're going to start him. Because Ben Simmons, we don't know what's going on with him still. I don't think he's going to be right till next season, even if he's going to get right. So he's going to get some more value because you're going to let him do what he wants. Dorian Finney-Smith, I think his value is going to pretty much stay the same. Kyrie is Kyrie. I mean, I don't care where you place Kyrie, he's Kyrie. So now he's with Dallas. The good thing for them is they kept Christian Wood in that deal. So I think they have like maybe a big 2.5. I don't want to say a big 3, but a big 2.5. As long as those other two guys can go with Luka, they're going to make some noise. So I don't know how if it even affects Luka, because Luka's going to ball regardless. He's going to have his money. He did the same thing with Jalen Brunson. So now you're just able to spell him longer. Or, like, you know, if he goes out the game, like the game, they don't got to give up leads or nothing like that. It'll be a negative on the plus minus when he goes out of games. So it's going to be a good move for them. I don't think the chemistry is going to be a problem, hopefully, because I like the Mavericks. But we'll see. I don't think anybody loses a whole lot of value. But yeah, the person I would want in that deal would be Spencer Dinwiddie.
I agree with that. Spencer Dinwiddie probably walks into a starting spot in Brooklyn because, like you said, I don't think that Brooklyn trusts Ben Simmons anymore. That seems like a relationship that's gone bad. And I think if they had the ability to trade Ben Simmons, if he had any value in the league, they would have got off of him when they got off with what we'll talk about, Durant and Kyrie. But what about Christian Wood? Does his value drop a little bit now? Because even though Spencer Dinwiddie was there before, Kyrie, of course, is a higher usage type of guy. Like you said, Luka Doncic is going to be Luka Doncic. I'm not worried about him. Do you think Wood is able to maintain his value, or do you think some of his production suffers a little bit with these two mega guards running the show in Dallas?
From a basketball standpoint, I think as long as he's going to be a good pick and roll guy for both of them guys. So I think his production should stay the same. Because, you know, when one goes out, they should have Christian Wood in. So if Luka's out, they should have Kyrie and Christian Wood in. If Kyrie's out, they should have Christian Wood and Luka in. He's going to still get his pick and roll opportunities. He's probably one of their better rebounders or better pick and pop guys. So I think his production should stay the same. But there is a world where you can say, like, he might get less looks because it's just going to be back and forth between Kyrie and Kyrie and Luka, but they move the ball. If you watch them, that team moves the ball. So if they keep moving the ball, I think his production is going to stay the same, hopefully.
The thing that worries me is, especially for fantasy, is does he lose opportunity because, you know, Jason Kidd's supposed to be all about defense, but we know Kyrie, Luka, Wood, you got three guys out there that can't play any defense. I'm guessing the team is just going to have to say, we're going to just out-offense everybody and just hope that we can score 130 to 128 every night. But that worries me a little bit just because now you really don't have anybody playing too much defense on the floor when you got those three guys all playing together.
Only lost to Dorian Finney-Smith. And, like, end of the day, like, guys like him, like, he's a good defender, but, like, the guys you want him to guard are going to get the money regardless. Like, you're talking about Kevin Durant's, Devin Booker's, like James Harden's, Kawhi's. You're going to get the money regardless, but no matter who's out there. So by losing him, you get more offense. I think that's a good thing for the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, just to push back on Dorian Finney-Smith, I will say, yes, you do lose a little bit of – I mean, you're, like you said, you're going to give up to those guys. There's no stopping them. But when you put a Dorian Finney-Smith on a guy, those guys are valuable because what you're hoping is that the offensive player just works harder, that they are a little bit under their percentages for the night when you got a Dorian Finney-Smith, a nice big wing that can, you know, move his feet, play good defense, you know, eat up, soak up some minutes. Like, you're just hoping to make it harder. So you're right that, hey, Kawhi's going to score, Tatum's going to score, Booker's going to score, but what you're hoping is that they just shoot worse percentages than they normally shoot during the season.
On the side of that, he's a guy you can sag off of, though. So, like, you can't sag off Reggie Bullock. You can't sag off Tim Hardaway Jr. You can't sag off Kyrie. You can't sag off Christian Wood. But if he's out there, you'd be like, man, if he wins the game for him, fuck him. They win. So, but their finish line just got better to me. So now, maybe not defensively, but their finish line can be Kyrie, Tim Hardaway Jr., Reggie Bullock, Luka, and Christian Wood. That whole team can knock down the shot. There is no doubling. That's over. There's no sagging off guys. You got to play these guys honest now. You got to get through screens. You got to talk. If there's Dorian Finney-Smith out there, you could be like, you know what? If Luka's on our side with him, we'll live with him shooting tonight. But you can't do that with Reggie Bullock. Because if he gets hot, he's going to stay hot. You can't do that with Tim Hardaway Jr. If he gets hot, he's going to stay hot. You definitely can't do it with Kyrie. So I think that they're getting better offensively just by losing him.
Well, what we're going to do now is take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll have a few more trades to go over. Welcome back. And like I said, we got a lot of trades to get through. So let's go ahead and skip to Wednesday night to the next biggest trade that happened. And that was Durant to Phoenix. Brooklyn, they decided to dismantle their whole squad. They shipped out Kevin Durant and TJ Warren to the Suns in exchange for receiving Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Jae Crowder, who was later rerouted to Milwaukee. For Phoenix, we've seen KD play with multiple superstars. He should keep his value. No worries there. But what are your thoughts on how this affects Chris Paul?
Chris Paul's going to be fine. I'm not worried about that. But I think this was a move to set up other moves, if you ask me. Because Chris Paul is what, like our age, damn near? And how old is Kyrie? Durant's age? How old is another guy that might want to be there? D'Angelo Russell? Like, those guys are more the age group of Devin Booker, leaving to some lesser extent to Durant. So I like the move for things, but at the same time, I don't think it's as big as everybody's making it out to. I don't think it's guaranteeing them no championship. I don't think it guarantees them a way out the West. I think they're going to have to fight just like everybody else in the West now. They had like 7-8 guys they could throw at you. Now, like, it's just them three. They're going to hope Ayton is going to show up because you know how he goes. Some days he's going to show up, some days he's not. He don't like the coach. I think he still wants to get traded. Like, they still got other things they got to work out. So I'm not completely sure that it's going to catapult them the way they think it is.
I think whenever you got Kevin Durant on your squad, it gives you a chance. So at the end of the day, they put themselves in a better spot than they were previously. So I think you got to do that trade 10 times out of 10. But what about TJ Warren? Do you think with him heading back home to Phoenix, do you think that his value increases or do you think it stays the same?
Stays the same, waiver wire. Like, he don't play D, like, and he can't stay healthy. Like, he can't give you 10 straight games and be consistent. So I think the value, like, you might see a Damian Lee gain some value, maybe a Torrey Craig if he can knock down some shots. Tonight, Josh Okogie went for 26. I don't know if that's going to be a constant thing, but they have other guys. I think they definitely took some of their depth, and now they're going to hitch the wagon to Durant and Devin Booker, and just hope that it gets them there. And I don't really see how, like, they're just going to be guaranteed. I think they'll be in a dogfight with a lot of the teams in the West. I think if the healthy Pelicans are there, that's a dogfight for them. A healthy Memphis, that's a dogfight for them. A healthy Lakers, I don't care what nobody say. Four times beating LeBron and AD is going to be tough. Beating Jokic four times right now is going to be tough. Beating Dallas right now four times is going to be tough. I don't think Durant is going to be just an end-all, be-all for the West.
Yeah, the West in general just got tougher. And, you know, as we go down some of these trades, we're going to see a lot of these contenders, even though they made small moves, they went out and got a lot of depth just to kind of, you know, bolster their bench and make sure that, you know, somebody gets injured or, you know, foul trouble, they got somebody that's competent that they could put in the game. Going back to this trade specifically, you look at Brooklyn, they shook things up. You know, now they got a lot of solid players coming back. Overall, they brought back Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. Who do you think the new starting five is for Brooklyn?
If it's me and I'm going to be the coach, I'm going to start Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm going to start Cam Johnson. I'm going to start Mikal Bridges. I'm going to start Nick Claxton. So that's four. I guess you want to start a Ben Simmons, but I don't think that's going to be a guarantee. They might start Joe Harris ahead of him. Or they're going to start the one guy you got. They're going to start, what's his name?
And Thomas.
Cam Thomas on this little 40-point spree. So probably going to start him, Spencer Dinwiddie, Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges and Nick Claxton, which is not a bad team. I mean, it's still they're not going to make no noise like that, but they're not going to be no easy out. Like you're going to have to go to play when you come to Brooklyn. You might get a win, but it's not going to be one that's going to be handed to you. And I think in a perfect world, they're going to want to start Ben Simmons eventually or get rid of him.
Yeah, in a perfect world, I think Ben Simmons gets discarded in the summer, but again, he has no real value right now. Like, I don't think a lot of teams believe in Ben Simmons, so you're not going to get anything of value back for Ben Simmons. If you wanted to get rid of Ben Simmons from a real life perspective, you're probably going to have to add draft capital in order to get him off your squad at this point. But for this season, I'm thinking the only person that I got different in my starting spot, I think Dorian Finney-Smith starts instead of Cam Johnson. I'm expecting Royce O'Neal, Cam Johnson, Ben Simmons to all kind of take a hit in production for fantasy purposes. But like you said, they got a squad now, and of course their ceiling has dropped, but they have a high floor where they're a competent team. There's still a team that can give you some trouble in a play-in game first round. Like yeah, Kyrie said this in an interview he had me roll. He's like, you know, I left them in fourth place. You know what I'm saying? So,
Tough.
I don't know, Kyrie be tripping, man, but said he left them in fourth place. So you figure at the very least, the worst that they're gonna do now is drop to the play-in game, but they're probably go 500 the rest of the season. So you put Cam Thompson in your starting unit, and just to give you some stats on what he's done, if you exclude the last three games where he dropped 40, there's been 16 games this season where he's played 20 plus minutes, and he's averaged 16 and a half points. 0.9 steals, 1.3 three-pointers made while shooting 40% from deep and shooting 48% from the field on 11.7 attempts. He definitely, I think, has made himself a fixture in the rotation over Patty Mills, over a Joe Harris. So I think those guys have really lost a lot of value now, too, with their emergence of Cam Johnson.
Patty Mills is done. I don't know why he's still playing. Seth Curry might get bought out in this. So we'll see. And then who's that? Royce O'Neal and I think
Royce
he's still
O'Neal and Joe Harris.
Joe Harris. I mean, I don't know. I think he's not the same no more. He can still shoot it, but he can't defend, and that's all he's doing is shooting. So he's gonna come in and be a one-trick pony and get his shots up and probably and come sit back down. But that team has a lot of that team has shooting. That team has size. That team can throw different lineups at you. That team's gonna play D. And they're going to get some draft picks. So they're probably like one or two pieces away from being right back where they were. And it's in the New York market. So you think they're going to get somebody eventually.
Yeah, agreed. I think they put themselves in a great spot. Like, this is the worst case scenario that the big three didn't work, but they put themselves back in a spot where they're competitive and they would probably be attractive to the next free agent guy that is disgruntled. So they got draft picks. They got some wiggle room now to kind of get themselves back in the top echelon of the East moving
Yeah.
forward. We had some minor trades on Tuesday. Dwayne Dedman, he got moved to from Miami to San Antonio, and it looks like a salary dump for Miami. Kessler Edwards, he got moved from Brooklyn to Sacramento, and he's probably not going to crack the rotation for the Kings this season, so there's no real reason to discuss that for fantasy. On Wednesday night, though, we had another blockbuster trade, and this was just an incredible trade period for this big names moving. Wednesday, we had a blockbuster three-way trade between Minnesota, Utah, and the Lakers. The Lakers, the trade sends Mike Conley, Nikhil Alexander-Walker to Minnesota, Russell Westbrook, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and Damian Jones to Utah, D'Angelo Russell, Mikal Beasley, and Jared Vanderbilt to the Lakers. Since you're a huge Laker fan, we'll go ahead and break this trade down into parts, and we'll start off with the Lakers. Westbrook was the only rotation player that left, and now they're bringing in three guys that should get minutes when you're looking at D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt. D'Angelo Russell, he's probably, well, obviously going to be starting now, so Schroeder, he loses his starting job. Do you think Beasley will also walk into the starting role, or do you think they're going to bring him off the bench?
Right now, I think it's Austin Reeves' job to lose for being the starting two guard, to be honest with you, because Austin Reeves is a better defender than Beasley. Not as good a shooter, of course, but he's definitely serviceable. I think our best lineup is going to be, or our starting lineup is probably going to end up being D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Bron, Rui, and AD. If we want to go big, we can probably go to D'Angelo Russell, Mo Bamba, AD, LeBron, and then that two spot could be Rui. That two spot could be, Malik Beasley, it could be Vanderbilt, it could be anybody, but they can go big. They now they have flexibility. So that's a good thing that they need now. So, but I think the starting two job is going to be Austin Reaves to lose, and they'll probably bring guys like Beasley, Vanderbilt, and Schroeder off the bench, so we have firepower off the bench, and Bamba. So now we're deeper. So now we have a real 8 or 9 man rotation. So of NBA players, not Patrick Beverley, not Damian Jones, not Juan Toscano-Anderson, and these other guys that, you know, should be in the G League or somewhere, or the end of your bench. Like, we have real NBA players now. So that's what we always needed. So our ceiling is a lot higher. Our two spot, like you said, I think is going to be a minute share. And in the day, I don't know who's going to overtake it, but I think, like I said, Austin Reaves will lose.
Okay. So with Austin Reaves starting and you got Beasley coming off the bench, then obviously Lonnie Walker is the guy that is basically no longer going to get, or he's going to be the one starting to get DMPs, you believe?
Well, they were playing three guards, so I think he'll get his money because he'll get his minutes, but it's not going to be star minutes like that, like he was getting before. He's probably going to take up some of them Patrick Beverley minutes where he should have been playing, like off the bench. Patrick Beverley should not have been starting for us. Yeah, great guy, plays D, love it, funny guy, throws cameras in ref's face, all that stuff, but he's not a starting level player in the NBA, especially not a starting two at 6'1".
Right.
Like, come on.
Right.
And Darvin Ham, I like Darvin Ham. I'm trying my best to like him, but again, these lineups that he was throwing out pre-trade were kind of stupid.
So you said Rui probably sticks in the starting role because he provides more spacing. But is Vanderbilt the first big off the bench now?
I mean, between him and Bamba, I think, yeah. Well, Vanderbilt's going to be a four, so he's going to come in. He's going to get minutes for 80. He's going to get minutes for Rui. He might get some minutes for LeBron, too. So he's going to get his fair share. I hope Bamba gets some minutes. We really need another rim protector. I think from big lineups, we can get him and AD on the floor together, we can shut the lane down and make teams have to shoot us out of games. And now we have bigger, longer defenders. So hopefully things change a lot for us.
I was thinking that Vanderbilt was going to get those 17 to 20 minutes that Thomas Bryant was playing, and especially with him gone now, I thought those minutes were his at least. But you're hoping that Bamba gets those 17 to 20 minutes a game backing up AD.
Yeah, Bamba's a rim protector. Thomas Bryant's not a rim protector. Thomas Bryant's an able-bodied energy guy. He's not a rim protector. Well, Mo Bamba's a rim protector. He can knock down a three. He's got a little bit more size on him, a little more sturdier than Thomas Bryant, I think. And like I said, he can be in big lineups and still shut the paint down. Like, guys were abusing Thomas Bryant on defense. Like, Jokic of the world, like, they're killing him. Like, Bamba's at least going to be like a guy, like, I have to at least get a jumper. I can't get a layup, hopefully. But we'll see.
It's funny that you brought up Jokic because that's where Thomas Bryant went. He's going to be backing up Jokic in Denver now. And
you hear why he wanted to leave?
No, what happened?
I'm going to paraphrase his quote, but his quote was along the lines of, like, I know I shouldn't get more minutes than AD, but I should be getting more. I should be getting, like, you know, like, almost like minute share with AD. It's like, what? Yeah, get out of here.
Well, you're definitely not getting minutes shared with Jokic, so you ain't gonna be happy there neither. So if you were holding out hope for Bryant to have some fantasy value, because you could at least when he was with the Lakers, you could at least kind of talk yourself into the fact of, okay, AD doesn't like to play the center. Maybe, you know, he could share the court with AD, you know, 10, 12 minutes out of a 48-minute game. But in Denver, he's not sharing the court with Jokic. He's just playing behind Jokic, period. So he's getting 10 to 12 minutes max now coming off the bench in Denver. So, and he's probably not even going to be the first big off the bench, honestly. So we'll see how that goes for him. I don't think he's going to be that much happier in Denver if that was his statement. But let's talk about Minnesota now. The only player that they sent out was D'Angelo Russell. So those minutes, they're going to be easily swapped with Mike Conley, who's coming in. Nikhil Alexander Walker, I think he stays fantasy irrelevant. Do we agree on that?
Irrelevant, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one step out the league.
And finally, we got Utah for their part of the trade. They brought Juan Toscano-Anderson, Damian Jones, but I don't believe anything improves for them, even on a team that is kind of deciding if they want to play or not. Yeah, I don't even know to buy them out because, they probably. I don't know because I don't think they have that much salary where you really would just need to buy them out. So,
what does Danny Ainge need with them?
I don't think he needs anything with them, but at this point, there's no reason to help out another team by dropping off players that if somebody got hurt can play 5-10 minutes a game. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think they garner enough respect. It's not like these are grizzle. This is not like an Eric Gordon or some type of vet where you got to say, hey, we got to give you some, we'll show you some respect and let you go pick your team or pick a contender that you want to play off the bench for. So I think they just, hey, tough luck this season and figure it out in the summer.
But I think Mike Conley should maybe get some increased value. Because Mike Conley is an adult. Like, that's kind of why I think why they got him. His percentages are going to be there. He's going to be a more of a setup guy for Rudy Gobert, for Anthony Edwards, for Towns whenever he gets back. So I think that's his value. Hopefully will go up maybe just a little bit. I want his percentages to be a little better. I was going to mess with him. But this should be a good situation for him because, like, he's a guy, like, he's going to get more open looks now playing with two superstars.
Yeah, and Conley's been playing pretty solid this season, averaging 10.7 points, 7.7 assists, one steal, 1.8 three-pointers made. So Conley hasn't really had a terrible season. What you should hope by having Gobert is having a point guard that knows how to play with Gobert now will hopefully maybe help unlock him a little bit more, especially while Karl-Anthony Towns is out.
Yeah, I hear you. But yeah, I think Conley's going to help that team a lot, especially in the playoffs, because now you like there's going to be less mistakes. Like when they were in the playoffs last year, they made all the mistakes. Like they would have Karl-Anthony Towns doing dumb shit, Patrick Beverley going his little Steve Francis impressions and stuff. And so now they have an adult who can say, like, look, man, we're going to slow this down. We're going to get Anthony Edwards a shot. We're going to get Karl-Anthony Towns a shot. We're going to play smarter. So that's what they need, another coach on the floor.
Well, let's circle back to Westbrook because – you know, he was included in this trade also, but he wants to play for a playoff caliber team, and he's probably going to get – they're saying that he's going to get bought out by Utah. I assume wherever he goes, he's going to want to start. And if that's the case, it cancels out teams like Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, Dallas, Golden State, Minnesota in the West. All those teams have competent starting point guards. So that leaves the Clippers and New Orleans. Do you think – Westbrook is a good fit for any of those two teams in the West?
The Clippers for sure, because they got rid of all their guards, so they're looking like they're making moves with the intent of getting a point guard. So I think he would fit over there. You know, you're going to get a guy with a chip on his shoulder in his contract year. He's getting to stay home. He's going to be on a revenge tour. I think he would fit there. If not the Clippers, if I were him, I would either go back to Miami or go back to Washington.
I was going to bring that up too, because if you look at teams that in the East that are in the playoff picture, you got to cross out teams like Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Cleveland, New York, Atlanta, Indiana. All those guys have established point guards. So that leaves Miami, that leaves Chicago. But you're saying even Washington, maybe you like to put in that mix.
Yeah. Well, that he'd be familiar with the system. And like that's the kind of team he needs to be on, like a team with guys he can trust when he passes the ball and all that stuff, and he can kind of run the show to some extent. Because all those guys, they don't got a floor general. Like if they had a guy that's gonna like look for Kuzma, look for Beal, get Porzingis involved, I think they would be a lot better team.
Well, I could see him fitting in that Heat culture, and I wouldn't be mad to see him go.
Heat culture too. He plays D, contrary to everybody. Westbrook plays D. He's got edge to him. So he'll fit well in Miami too.
Yeah, I like that. I like that fit. And I don't know if Kyle Lowry is holding up the way that they were hoping that he was holding up. So I can see him coming in there and kind of taking over Lowry's spot.
Yeah.
And late Wednesday night we had a trade where we saw Jakob Poeltl head back to Toronto with Ken Birch going in exchange to San Antonio. And I love this for Poeltl because I felt like he was sitting out at least one game a week when he was playing for the Spurs because they were so intent on this tank that they're trying to do. So by him being in Toronto now, I think this means more consistency for fantasy managers. But now that Toronto has a true center in the building, I think this definitely makes Preston Tachua drop in fantasy. He no longer has any value, especially with OG Anunoby not being traded. But do we think that this affects Spicy P, because he's going to be moving over to the four? He's currently averaging 8 rebounds a game. Do you think Poeltl hurts his value?
No, I think his value is going to stay the same. He's going to do what he does to a double-double guy. He actually makes their team better. So I don't know. Like, you know, the word was that they were going to try to trade everybody. So I don't know what Toronto's going for, but I mean, they just got better, if you ask me. So they might flip with a play in spite if they're lucky. I think Hurdle's value is going to stay where it's at.
Yeah, I do love that for Toronto players, because now that they have everybody locked in and they didn't really make any moves, they have nothing to do but try to go for this play in spot. So at least we kind of alleviate that worry of them tapping out and just kind of trying to bottom out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they're a good team on paper. I mean, they have like a logjam at forward, but I think they'll probably take care of that in the summer. Like between Scotty Barnes and OG, one of them got to go. So you would think.
And if you look at it from San Antonio's perspective, now they got Zach Collins, Kim Birch, Dwayne Dedman. What's your depth chart out of those three centers?
Zach Collins, Kim Birch, Dwayne Dedman. All them guys sound like G League guys. But I think Dwayne Dedman's on his last legs. I think he's done. Zach Collins probably going to be your starter. And the other guy will be your backup. But, I mean, the Spurs are tanking, clearly. They're looking for their center to be Victor Wembanyama.
So they definitely got an eye towards the future. But this year, if you look at Collins in those 7 games he had as a starter, averaged 10.4 points and 7.6 rebounds in 27 minutes. That's nothing spectacular, but he's a good guy to pick up, kind of have at the end of your bench. He's a useful fantasy player. So definitely improves the stock of Zach Collins with Poeltl moving back to Toronto. And we'll go ahead, we'll take another quick break here. And when we get back, we'll go back through some of the last little moves that happened during the trade deadline. So welcome back, and let's go ahead and continue with these trades that were happening over the trade deadline. And we'll continue with Wednesday night. Josh Hart was traded to New York with Cam Reddish heading back to Portland in exchange. Josh Hart, when I look at him, he seems to be a real Tibbs type of guy, good defensive player, strong rebounder. Do you think he ends up eating into Quentin Grimes and Emmanuel Quickley's playing time?
Quickly for sure. I don't know about Grimes. I think they'll probably be on a minute share, but I don't know how quick he's going to recover from that, because Josh Hart plays D. He rebounds. He's a good guy for Tibbs' system, so I think he's going to definitely get some minutes.
Looking at Cam Reddish, I know Portland also brought in Matisse Thybulle, but do you think that Cam Reddish sees the floor more? Do you think Matisse Thybulle sees the floor more? Who do you think benefits from Portland's new setup?
I mean, Cam Reddish is kind of like on a wait-and-see type thing. I don't even know if he's going to start. Like, he needs minutes. He needs, like, actual game action. And so if he can find a way to get that, I don't know who he's going to get it over. I think they're trying to develop Shaedon Sharpe. They're trying to develop they're trying to work with Jeremy Grant. They still got Dame. Thybulle actually plays D. So, I mean, he's got his work cut out for him. I'd like to see him get some more minutes, because I know he can shoot it. He's got a higher ceiling. I think his ceiling is like DeAndre Hunter, hopefully. But he has to get some minutes and start playing D. So we'll see. I'm leaving him on the waiver wire until I see for sure. I don't know. I don't want to mess with him right now.
I agree with you there. I think Thybulle is a guy that I probably want to put on my watch list, because, like you said, Portland, they need defense. And if Thybulle can kind of turn himself back into that kind of elite steals guy, give you some solid rebounds, like about 5 rebounds from the small four position, then I think Thybulle becomes a streamable player again. But as you said, they're probably investing in trying to develop Shaedon Sharpe a little bit more. And as far as Cam Reddish goes, I think at this point, he might not be the player that we thought he once was going to be coming out of high school.
Yeah, they said that when he was at Duke, he had a bad diet. Like, he's not very locked in. So those are things you can't be when you want to be an elite athlete in the NBA. So we'll see. Now you're on your third team, and it's looking bad for you.
What else do we have? We have Thursday. We started off the trade day. Mike Muscala went to Boston, and this is where we start to get into a lot of these contender teams making minor moves, trading for depth, really. And with Boston, they traded for Mike Muscala, sending Justin Jackson to OKC. We can skip over this one. Again, good real-life trade for depth for Boston. We also have what we referenced earlier with Jay Crowder being rerouted to the Bucks from Brooklyn. This was part of a three-way trade that only sent picks to Brooklyn, and Jordan Nwora and Serge Ibaka got sent to Indiana. Is there any need to even put Jay Crowder on a watch list now that he's on a team that he feels like he wants to play for, I assume?
I wouldn't be watching him because, like, he's a one-trick pony on top of, like, he hasn't played since the last playoffs. So he's on a wait and see. I mean, I wouldn't put him on a watch list, but maybe keep an eye on him to some extent. But I think he's got his work cut out for him beating up Pat Connaughton and Grayson Allen. Like, those guys, they play D2. They shoot threes too.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any point in really. He has to get himself back into shape. He hasn't been playing. By the time he even gets himself even halfway fantasy relevant, season probably going to be done for us as far as fantasy is concerned. We've already discussed Matisse Thybulle, but he was also part of a three-way trade that sent Jalen McDaniels to Philadelphia and Steve Mihailuk to Charlotte. And I'll just say this, McDaniels, he had a couple moments in Charlotte where he was giving us some solid production and was becoming a useful fantasy player. But I don't see much value for him playing behind Tobias Harris. In real life, again, great trade for depth. You could always use a big wing that can guard, and that's useful for eating up minutes against the Jason Tatums of the world. Like you said, those guys, Jason Tatum and them, they're going to eat, but you got a guy that you could throw out six fouls on, hopefully make it a little bit harder to get their offense up. So a nice real-life trade, but no real fantasy relevance there. We move on to, let's see here, George Hill to Indiana. We can skip that because there's nothing. Pacers, they bring back George Hill, so another guy that went home in this trade season. A lot of trades I noticed where players are kind of going back to teams that they played for before. Let's see here.
John Water.
Exactly. We got Bones Highland to the Clippers in exchange for picks. This is an interesting one kind of because, like you said earlier, the Clippers, they moved off of Reggie Jackson and John Wall. We've seen that Highland can be a microwave scorer off the bench for Denver. Do you think that he eventually wins that starting spot in L.A.? Or, like you said, you thinking that it's a done deal that Westbrook goes to the Clippers?
The Clippers have a logjam at forward and at guard now. So I don't know what they're going to do with Bones Highland. I think they're going to get Westbrook, but I mean, like, are you going to take Norman Powell off the floor for Bones Highland? I'm not. Norman Powell is killing right now. Is he going to get minutes ahead of Aaron Gordon? I don't think so. I mean, I'm not positive. Aaron Gordon plays D. Bones Highland, the biggest thing about him, he's too small. He doesn't play D. And he gets pushed around a lot. So, I mean, you got guys in there now that Norman Powell and Aaron Gordon are already ahead of him. And then you also have, Terrence Mann ahead of him. So I don't know how many minutes he's going to get or if he's going to be allowed to affect the game. He's a good shooter. I mean, I think there's going to be a niche for him, but not to the extent where he would be a starter.
All right, we can kind of do a little bit of a rapid fire here to try to close this out. Dario Saric to OKC with Mike Muscala going to Boston. Do we think that he could win the starting spot, or do you think the other Jalen Williams, the tall one, does he get more opportunity down the stretch for OKC at the center spot?
Well, Jalen Williams is going to be a problem starting next year. So Dario Saric is like another guy on his way out the league, or I don't think he's going to be fantasy relevant. He's too old for that team. So we can move on, like you said. Next deal.
Do you agree that Sadiq Bey to the Hawks, does he lose value now that he's sharing time with DeAndre Hunter, Bogdan Bogdanovic, the rookie AJ Griffin?
He's still a wafer guy. I think they figured him out or something, because the way he was playing last year, and now I guess they've got tape on him and they know what he does and all this stuff. So he's going to be in a timeshare for backup minutes. So I'm not worried about him either.
As a guy that watches a lot of Hawks games, I hope this doesn't eat into the rookie AJ Griffin's minutes, because I feel like they really need to keep developing him. He's a player that I think that might show some potential over these next few years. So we'll see what happens there. Next one that's kind of interesting here is James Wiseman to Detroit. Does this hurt Jalen Duren's upside and his playing time? Do you think Wiseman is a streamable option? What are your thoughts about that trade?
Well, I heard today when I was there talking about this trade, they want to start Wiseman. But I think at the same time, he's got to show and prove now. You're in a real center's timeshare like this. Him, Isaiah Stewart, and Jalen Duren, all three of them are front-level centers. So, like, I'm intrigued by him a little bit because I know he has some upside, and I know what he can be, but I don't know if they're going to give him an opportunity. They said they are, so, I mean, maybe for a week you can try him out.
Yeah, that's going to be a mess there. I feel bad for Jalen Duren because – he was just kind of starting to get some time. He was a double-double machine there for a minute.
That's his benefit, though, because Jalen Duren started – he came off the ground solid. So, like, James Wiseman is stumbling around since he got in the league. So, in my opinion, Jalen Duren is the number one right now. Is can he be better than Isaiah Stewart, which is I'm not sure about that. And then can he eventually overtake Jalen Duren? So, the time will tell.
Well, definitely one to watch there. And like you said, at this point – worth the flyer if you want to test it out for a week and see what happens. Next one is Devontae Graham to the Spurs. With everybody hurt in San Antonio, Trey Jones, Devin Vassell, Romeo Langford, is he worth a speculative ad? And the reason I say this is Devontae Graham, he's not really going to be helping the Spurs win any games. So they can let him jack up shots just like how he used to when he was in Charlotte. And it probably helps their tanking efforts. So how are you feeling about a little short-term flyer on Devontae Graham?
If they're going to play him, then maybe, because if I need threes on the waiver wire. But, I mean, I don't know what his contract situation is like. If he's done it last year, he might get bought out. That move was better for the Pelicans because now they got to add another wing defender. So that helps them. Josh Richardson going to the Pelicans. But I don't think Devontae Graham's going to be fans relevant regardless of who he goes to.
Mo Bamba to the Lakers. You already kind of spoke on him, but how you feeling? Well, just go ahead and reiterate how you're feeling about Mo Bamba.
If they use him right, he has value. But I'm not sure what they're going to do with him. Like, to me, they should start him and make it that we should just go big. And then when we need to go small, we can. But we should start off big. So that will give him at least maybe 20, 25 minutes. But I'm not sure they're going to do that. They might bring him off the bench like Thomas Bryant. So if they do that, then I would say his value is going to stay where it's at as a waiver guy. But I think the Lakers should try to use him. Like, maybe start him, give him, like, at least 20, 30 minutes. And just, like, let him be a rim protector, a guy who can spread the floor for us. And if they do him like that, then he'll have some value. But I don't know what Darvin Ham is doing right now. He's a good coach, but I think his lineups are a little they're depending on who plays defense. And so if Mo Bamba is going to play defense, he's going to get his minutes. But if he's not, he's going to be like Damian Jones is sitting down. So he needs to come there and show and prove that he's a rim protector and he can knock down threes. He'll get his minutes. But if he can't do those things and be solid in the middle, he's not going to get a lot of minutes because Darvin Ham's not going to play if you don't play defense.
And I just want to thank OE for his time. He had another engagement. So we're just going to quickly finish out the rest of this. And I wish I would have skipped over Mo Bamba since he had already gave us our thoughts and gave him a chance to go ahead and do his victory lap on Mason Plumlee, because me and him have been arguing about the value of Mason Plumlee all season. He has been disrespecting what Mason Plumlee brings to the table. But at the end of the day, the guy averaged 12.2 points, 9.7 rebounds, and 3.7 assists from the center position for the season so far. That all probably comes to an end now with him going to the Clippers. The problem now we have to figure out is, does he warrant a minute share with Zubac? He's a better passer than Zoo, but Zoo is a better defender. So we'll have to see. Ty Lue doesn't seem to like to play big lineups. He likes to play small most of the time. So it really probably hurts the value of both of these players, Zubac and Mason Plumlee. But it is something to watch. Mason Plumlee, I would give him a few games just to kind of see how it goes, to see if he can still get, 22 minutes or so a game. But if he's playing 20 or less, he's most likely not going to be fantasy relevant or valuable enough to keep on your roster. And he's probably going to end up being a drop. But what the move does is it finally unlocks Mark Williams for the Charlotte Hornets. And he's been a per-minute monster. If you look at his per 36 stats, he's averaging 18.2 points, 13.4 rebounds, 1.9 steals, and 2.6 blocks per 36 minutes again. And that's amazing. Mark Williams should be a guy coming down the stretch of fantasy playoffs that is going to be one of those silly season heroes. he's in a position where he's going to be playing. He needs to be developed. You don't have to worry about him sitting games because Charlotte's not playing for anything. He's not good enough that he's going to cause Charlotte to win games. Shoot, Charlotte already hasn't been winning games. So with Mark Williams, you don't really have any fear of him not being available during fantasy playoffs.
Just looking through my notes, and I'm realizing that when we went over the three-team trade between Minnesota, Utah, and LA, I forgot to mention that Colin Sexton is going to be a big winner. Because when you look at it for Utah, with Westbrook being reported that he's going to be bought out, there's no incoming guards. Conley and Alexander Walker, those are two guards that are leaving from Utah. No incoming guards coming into Utah. It's only one Tostando Anderson and Damian Jones. So that leaves plenty of opportunity now for Colin Sexton to get a healthy dose of minutes. He's probably going to be playing 30 minutes a night now down the stretch. So have to make a public apology to Elhan. Again, I still don't think that he really should have made the trade, but if that was his thinking, trying to do a long-term play on Colin Sexton, it's going to pay benefits now with the trade happening, moving Mike Conley from Utah and not having anything returned to block Colin Sexton from getting playing time. The issue with Colin Sexton to me, though, is he's just a pure scorer. So hopefully we'll see him get some assists. If he can get close to 5 assists, 5.5 assists, give you 3.5, 4 rebounds, just give it a little peripheral stats. If he's not giving you those extra little stats, all he's doing is this scoring. Of course, you get a guy that has the ability to score 20 points a game. I don't think that's going to be his role in Utah, especially with Lauri Markkanen and Jordan Clarkson still on the squad. Either way, though, excellent, excellent scenario for a Colin Sexton, and his fantasy value should skyrocket again the rest of the season. And lastly, I did pull a Basketball Reference because there was a little bit of deformation to Carmelo's name. So I'm on Basketball Reference. I'm looking it up. He was one of my favorite players growing up. So, of course, I got to go ahead and rep for him now. At age 38, Malone played in 80 games, averaged 22.4 points, 8.6 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 1.9 steals. Age 39, he averaged 20.6 points, 7.8 rebounds, 4.7 assists, and 1.7 steals. And he played 81 games as a 39-year-old. Now, I get it. I know for everybody else, Utah wasn't cool. You know, I was the lone black kid rooting for Malone and Stockton, hoping that they could take down Jordan. Happy when they beat the Lakers. I was shooting my elbow jump shots, screaming out Malone in practice. That was my thing. But let's not get it twisted. Malone was a productive player in his older age. I get that he's not going to be on a lot of people's Mount Rushmore basketball players, but the man got it done all the way up until age 39. Age 40 was when he started to fall off. That was his last year when he played with the Lakers. But overall, the man was the Iron Man. You look at the career stats, and only one season other than the lockout season did Malone play less than 80 games. So the guy was never injured. He played 19 seasons. 17 of those seasons, he averaged over 20 points. Like, come on, give Malone his respect, man. And yeah, in that final year, I know Chase is a Lakers fan, so that's probably why his view on Malone is a little bit skewed, because in that final year, he was 40 years old. He only played 42 games that season due to a knee injury, which was caused by a Phoenix player falling into him after a jump shot. Kind of like, it was almost like that Jimmy Butler incident where Jimmy Butler kind of fell and then rolled into Kevin Durant's leg. It was a similar type of play like that that took Malone out during the middle of the season. He was able to come back for the playoffs, but after the injury, he really wasn't the same guy. And anyways, he wasn't going to have that same role when you're playing with Shaq and Kobe. So he wasn't going to be able to score 20 on that squad. But either way, I just wanted to set the record straight. Malone was a well-tuned athlete, took great care of himself all the way up into his later stages of his career, and was a productive player basically his whole career. So, y'all must have forgot.
Anywho, there were a few teams and players that we didn't go over, but for fantasy purposes, it's probably not worth the mention anyways. So we'll go ahead, wrap it up here. Again, thank you again to OE for taking time out to help be the co-host on this episode. Hope you guys enjoy the trade season, trade deadline review. And quick reminder, you have 2 weeks until the DHL trade deadline. That's February 23rd. That's a Thursday, February 23rd. So trades need to be accepted by midnight Pacific Standard Time, 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So actually probably a minute before. But either way, once that time goes over, the system won't even allow you to accept the trade anyways. But as long as those trades, even if I'm not up, don't worry about it. As long as those trades are at least showing up as being accepted and are in my mailbox by the end of the day for Thursday night, we can go ahead, put it on the message board, let those trades get processed, you know, have the review period, let those trades get processed. So again, you have 2 weeks to make your final moves as far as trades are concerned. And then, of course, good luck to everybody down the stretch. But we'll go ahead, we'll shut it down here. I appreciate your time. As always, thank you for spending some of your day with me talking about fantasy basketball.
Oh, my God!